This interview is being recorded for the Holden Village Oral History Series on August 19, 1988. The interview subject is Dorothy Bennett, who has been lapidary at Holden since 1974. I am Charles Lutz. I am the author of the village history that was published in 1987, Surprising Gift. Dorothy, you have been lapidary at Holden for about 14 years now. Maybe this is the 15th year, actually.
Yes.
What does a lapidary do?
Well, the word lapidary in the dictionary says it's a person who cuts and polishes gemstone. And I brought the lapidary to the village in 1974.
There was none before that?
No.
Here?
No, there was none. And have been helping people cut and polish gemstones ever since.
How many do you have?
It is the 15th season.
Yes. How many do you have through in a typical season? How many people?
Around, well, I think I would need one of those things that they have in the places where they count people coming and going.
A turnstile.
Yes, yeah. A turnstile, because we have people wandering in there all day long to ask questions or look or watch. Mm-hmm. But as to people who have actually made cabochons, which is what we are doing.
What is a cabochon?
A cabochon is a crafted gemstone with a rounded top. And it's the beginner's technique, and it's also the oldest technique in making gemstones. If you want to go back to, well, if you saw King Tut's exhibit, you saw cabochons. Because 3,000 more years ago, 3,000, 5,000 years ago, that was the technique that they used in making gemstones. And it's also the way you start people. It's the beginning technique.
And the number who would do that in a typical
we have,
year?
300 people, more or less, again, depending upon the length of time. But usually in a six-month period, it may run a little over 300. And they will do better than 500 cabochons. And then there will probably be a few other kinds of things that will be done, too. We might manage to squeeze in the polishing of a geode or something. But usually it's cabochons, because that's the quickest thing that they can do and have the whole experience of cutting, shaping, sanding, and polishing a stone. And they get the whole process irrespective of what you were polishing, but it's the quickest way to do it.
And that process can be completed, obviously, in less than a week by a guest
who is
here for a week.
Yes, I tell them it takes about 4 hours, give or take. And it's usually done in two appointments, although they can spread it out more if they want to have shorter appointments. The first step takes an hour and a half to 2 hours, and the second step, done on the second day, not the same day, would take probably 2 to 2.5 hours. It varies on the size of the stone, too, because we do give them a little choice in there. And the larger stones take a little bit longer.
And you have normally been here for these 15 seasons from about the 1st of May, did you say, until the end of October?
Yes, usually it is the 1st of May.
So about half of the year.
Yes.
And in the other part of each year, you are not living here at the village. You are traveling.
Right.
You've visited many parts of the world, I understand. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've crossed the equator 30 times.
30 times.
Yes, people ask me where I live, and I say I live where I am. I sold my home in 1973, and that was how the lapidary managed to come to Holden Village in 74.
Where was your home
at that time? At that time, I lived out of Monroe, Washington, and it didn't make sense to me to rent an apartment and lock it up for 6 months of every year. And I did a little figuring and discovered that I could travel and even live in motels cheaper than maintaining my home.
Yes.
So I wanted to travel, and so that's what I did.
And this will be your last year at Holden as lapidary.
Yeah, that's right.
I imagine you still hope to and plan to return on visits to the village.
I hope to. The problem is that it's my orthopedist that's retiring me.
Oh.
And the problem here is the terrain.
Yes, the steepness.
And the stairs that I should not be doing.
Yes.
Because of problems that I have with osteoarthritis.
What were you doing in this area before 1974? Were you doing lapidary elsewhere?
Well, the first time I came to Holden was in 1934.
34?
Yes, 1934. And having been an outdoors person all my life since I was a child and in various ways, at that time I was backpacking. And Dorothy Spoon, a friend of mine, we were both teachers. We had some time in the summer, and so we were on the tag end of a 180-mile backpack trip when we came through here.
And that was before the mine was opened.
Yes, it was before House Sound was fully operating. They were in here.
They were beginning operations too.
They were mucking out in the main portal. What we know as the main portal. They were only in about 1,000 feet
mm-hmm.
When we came.
But the town site had not been built.
No. There was no Holden Village as we know it. Not the town site that we live in, nor the town site that the miners lived in. Neither one. That was all woods.
Mm-hmm.
And the road had just been completed in 1934 up to the mine. When Dorothy and I crossed over from Sahegan, because we had hiked through the North Cascade Primitive Area, which is now the North Cascade National Park.
Oh, yes.
And we came down Bridge Creek and Sahegan then to Sahegan and took the boat across to Lucerne. And then the people there told us not to go hiking up because the road was now completed. It had just been completed. And the truck would be down and we could ride in the truck. Well, he asked when it would be down and found that it wasn't coming down till around noon. And so the next morning we got up and were on the road at 6 in the morning and walked up to the mine. And we met the truck when we were almost up to the mine. I think we were about 9 miles. But the road crossed over. It would be disappearing under the tailings now.
Oh.
It would be down between 9 and 10 mile, probably just below 10 mile, where the land kind of comes even with the creek.
Crossed Railroad Creek there.
It crossed Railroad Creek and
went
then
to the south side.
And then it's switched back up the other side. And you can, from my window in the hotel, every morning I look out there and I can see the line of where the old road was because the trees are younger below.
Yes.
And there's such a distinct difference. Also, the second year that I was up here as a guest, I backtracked it and from the mine and backtracked it down until it disappeared under the tailings.
Mm.
And what surprised Dorothy and I when we left the mine, we expected to be on trail going on up, heading on up to Heart Lake and so forth. And we discovered that the road still continued. And the road came down to the river, and we didn't get on trail until we crossed the river. It didn't cross exactly where it crosses now. Do you know where the big rock is up there where a lot of people like to fish?
Yes.
Well, that's about the place where it crossed at that time.
In
34. But when we arrived at the mine, there were just a few miners there. There was one building that was obviously new. And the foundation of it is still there. It's the closest one to the mine portal. And nothing left now but the floor and foundation. Whoever was in charge, that person welcomed us to visit the mine and even gave us sack lunches and took us in a little mine car. We kind of chuckled over that because it was only, we only went 1,000 feet in that mine, and then there was a little room on the left-hand side where the miners were eating lunch. And so we sat in there and ate the sack lunch and had this man tell us all about what they were doing in mucking out and doing further testing, drill core testing and whatnot, to determine to what extent they would go with the mine. It was 3 years later then,
yes,
before the
37.
I had a little argument with Nigel Adams because in one of his talks he said the road was completed in 1937. So after the meeting I told him the road was completed in 1934. And he said, no, it was completed in 37. And I said, no, it was completed in 34. I know because I walked it. He said, you didn't walk a road, you walked a trail. And I said, no, we walked the road. And I have a witness. There were two of us. And, but it couldn't have been wide enough for a truck to travel. And I said, well, the people at Lucerne had tried to talk us out of walking it because the truck would come down. And we met the truck almost at the mine. And I realized afterwards, though, that we were both right. The road was completed in 1934 to the mine. And this road that looks pretty much the same as it was today, and I walked it, wasn't completed into the village until the village was built.
Yes.
And the village wasn't built until 1937. You see.
So the road on this side, the north side of Railroad Creek,
from 10 Mile,
was done in 37.
From 10 Mile into the village, the road was then completed in 1937. I'm sorry I didn't think about it when I was talking to him. Sometime when I see him, I'll have to tell him he was right, too.
Yes. Well, after 1934, when did you next come to the what is now Holden Village?
1968. Mm-hmm.
That's when it was already operating for five or six years as a Lutheran Church Renewal Center, and the director at that time was Carol Hinderly.
Right.
And you came as a guest then?
Right, I did.
And for how long did you stay that first time?
Well, the first time I did what too many people do. I stayed too short a time. I came for only 4 days, and I was completely exhausted, weary, physically, mentally, emotionally, and I slept most of the time.
Oh, dear.
And as I look back, the thing that I remember most about that time was the orientation as to how it differed then and now. And the young pastor who gave the orientation gave us a short talk, and then he took us on a tour. And we did a walking tour of all of the activities and things that were going on, so we had some feeling about the village after that.
Do you remember who did the orientation?
No, I don't. I've been trying to recall that. He was a young pastor and a very nice
Who was on the
person.
Staff here.
Yes, he was on the staff here. And he has not, I've kind of watched for him showing up, you know, and he hasn't, he might have been back in those early years, but he hasn't been back since I've been on in the lapidary.
But, and did you continue to come each year after 68?
Yes, but let me tell you this, that I didn't sleep the whole time I was here.
Oh.
I went to every single session. I just went to sleep. I went to bed in between, but I went to every single session during those 4 days. And it was about the fourth day when I really felt rested and relaxed enough to realize how much this village really had to offer, and that I was going to have to come back, and that was a big mistake to only come for 4 days.
Four days, yes.
I tell people you should never come for less than a week on your first time.
Yes.
So the next year I came three times.
Three times in 69.
Right. And I came every year thereafter for a period of time. I started bringing my grandchildren up then with me.
Mm-hmm.
And came as a guest through 72, But I did not come in 73 because I had my house up for sale then and stayed around to catch the right buyer.
Yes.
It was in 1972, I think, perhaps 71. At any rate, I know I talked to Werner about it in 1972. I said, how come you don't have a lapidary up here? Every ghost town that I go in has a rock shop, but you have crafts up here, and you have pottery and weaving and so on, and I would sort of expect to see a lapidary. And he said, well, we don't have any gemstones in the valley. It doesn't produce any.
That was Werner Jansen, yes, the business manager
the business
at that
manager,
time.
Business manager, right. And so I talked to Carol Hinderly, too, and they both said, yes, they would like to have one. I asked them that. I said, would you like to have one if one came your way? Oh, yes, we would like very much to have one. And so I said, well, after I sell my home, we can see if you still want one.
And you had been doing lapidary outside of the village?
Well, I retired from 41 years in public education, and lapidary was a hobby. And my husband and I were both outdoors people, and so we started collecting some and finally decided we really wanted to get involved in it. And so we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so by that time, well, we started in seriously doing lapidary as a hobby in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Our vacation trips used to be a combination of fishing, climbing, and rock hunting.
Yes. And my understanding is that much of the equipment in the lapidary here, you have contributed. You have brought that in.
I've contributed all of the equipment.
All of the equipment.
Excepting, there's one of the polyarbors that was a memorial for, I'm trying to think of his name, Allison.
I don't know.
It was a memorial.
And where do the stones come from that you use?
They're donated. Everything in that lapidary has been donated. The equipment, the tools, the supplies, all of the stones.
Donated by whom? The stones.
Well, I gave the first 2,060 pounds, which was my husband's and my collection. My husband had passed away. And since that time, we probably consume around 50 pounds a year.
Mm-hmm.
It varies, again, on the length of time. And our present inventory runs over 3,900 pounds. So you see how many stones have been contributed. And by many people. I have a book over there that I record all the gifts in. And many people. Bob Storch of Walla Walla was one of the large contributors. He has given stones several times over the years. His daughter, Carol, you know, has been on staff, and she in the early years she would bring a sack full in, and then finally he came up and gave us 300 pounds 1 year, and then the next year he was going to give us 600 pounds, I thought, but it turned out to be over 1,200 pounds in that single gift. And we're at a point now where we discourage people from giving us any more stones unless it is real top quality.
Yes.
We have four different kinds that we would mind receiving: the tiger eye and African blue lace, jade, and lapis lazuli. Those four we would gladly receive because they are the more expensive stones and not usually donated. But as far as most agates and jasper, we have a wide variety. We have a really good selection over there of the quartz-type stones. This is what we have.
To the people who make a gemstone while they're here, what was the term for it you used?
Cabochon.
The cabochon. Do they pay anything for the
stone?
Oh, yes.
Yes, we priced
the stone. Or for the use of the equipment, or?
Yes. In the early years, when the first two or three years, when we were just getting started, and actually the first year, whereas I brought the equipment in May, they didn't have a carpenter or electrician available at that time. They were busy, you know, with the spring opening, getting things ready. And so Werner told me to come back at midsummer, and perhaps there'd be someone. In the meantime, we selected the location, and I drew the plans for it. And when I came back in July, I could see no way were they going, you know how it is when you're in the middle of the season.
Yes.
And there's people everywhere. So I said, I'll see you in the fall. And I came back then the end of August, and Werner said, stick around, we've got an electrician and a carpenter.
This was 74?
This was 74.
And did you set up in Chalet 1 basement?
Yes.
From
yes.
The first?
That's right. He had selected that as the most likely spot. He told me to go and prowl under all the buildings and see if I could find a better spot, but I thought he'd made a very good selection. And so it was September then before we got the lapidary going, and I actually stayed here, I think, till the 9th of November that year. But I get out when the snow comes, because I'm not a snow person.
Okay. That's when you traveled to other parts of the world.
That's when I head south, yes.
All right.
That's why I've crossed the equator so many times. I go from summer to summer and back to summer.
Let's talk a little more about your life before you came to the village. You were a school teacher, you said. You were in public school education.
Yes, I retired with 41 years in public education.
What did you teach?
Well, I taught primary, principally, for the first 13 and a half years. And then I was invited to go into the county superintendent's office as deputy, which I did.
Where was
reluctantly.
That?
That was in Snohomish County, Everett, Washington.
All right.
I was enjoying the classroom so much, I didn't think I wanted to change, and I told the county superintendent that, and I also told him that I couldn't come anyway, I was under contract. And he said, you don't think I wouldn't have already cleared that with your superintendent before I talked to you? And so he pulled that rug out from under me, and I finally decided to try it, and I found that it was just as stimulating and as much fun as classroom teaching, and
mm-hmm.
I really, really did enjoy the 27 and a half years I spent in that office. It so happened after about, I'd been in the office about a year, that the superintendent had a massive heart attack and was not able to come back. He tried to come back, but he was not able to do so. And the commissioners appointed me superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I remained in that office until 1971. And it was very challenging, and
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it very much.
And your family, tell us a little about your family.
Well, I married Harry Bennett of Monroe, Washington. And he had two boys. His first wife had passed away several years before I met
mm-hmm.
him. And so I finished raising the boys, and they have since given me 14 grandchildren and 20 great-grandchildren, and I'm very close to them and see a lot of them. And
some of them have been here to the village?
All of the grandchildren have been here, but three. I think there are three that mm-hmm. haven't made it yet.
And what memories do you have of the 15 years in lapidary that you would especially like to lift up mm-hmm. for our listeners? I imagine it's been a good period for you, good experience for you. You've
yes,
enjoyed it,
has.
Or you would have stopped doing it.
That's right. Of course, I should tell you that I asked Werner. After we got it up here, after I got it moved in May, you know, and I said, now who's going to operate it for you? And he said, well, of course we thought you would do it. And I said, well, I won't leave you high and dry. I'll fill in until you get someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've been doing is
for 15 years.
Filling in. But I must say that after the second year, I was enjoying it so much that we did continue to look, however. I was always kind of alert to someone who might be interested in coming in. For one thing, it requires a full-time assistant. You definitely need two people in there, because this is an individual teaching job, you see.
Yes.
You have to take each person and show them. You can take a group and tell them what they're going to do, and you can demonstrate that to that group. But when they face those grinding wheels that are going very, very fast, they have to have someone really stand by them and show them and watch them. And
it's like tutoring, individual,
yes,
one-on-one.
Yes, it is.
One
That's
on.
Right.
Have you always had an assistant?
No. The first 3 or 4 years I didn't have, but as it got so very busy and so intense, I realized that I was going to have one, or I wouldn't be able to continue doing it. It was too much of a strain, because those people, see, they go on six different wheels. And you can have nine wheels busy, nine people all on a wheel at the same time. And each one of them has to be shown the next step. So that keeps one person very busy in that end of the room. At the same time, you've got people drifting in that door, and they bring rocks that they want you to tell them what they are, and they have all kinds of questions, or they want a little lecture about what's going on. And somebody has to be at the other end of the room to take care of those people. Also, we have people coming in to make appointments. Obviously, if they're on six different wheels and you have such a large crowd that you need to schedule them so that someone new goes on as someone comes off that wheel,
right.
Then it has to be by appointment. And so someone has to be working with the people that are coming in for appointments too.
And how many hours a day would you be open normally?
Well, we start at 8:30. You see, in those first years, I would let them trim out their own stone on the trim saw. But we soon saw that that was not going to work, because there was only one trim saw, and you'd have a line. It held up everybody. So I realized that we, or at that time I, would have to trim out the stones and have them ready for people to start on the grinding wheels, because we had four grinding wheels. By that time, I had added two. I had brought two with me, and then I had added two, because we obviously needed four to start enough people to take care of the volume of business that was coming there. And they pay for, I cut out the blank. As you see, we start with rough stones, and then they're slabbed. Of course, Bob Storch was good enough to give us many, many pounds, hundreds of pounds of stones already slabbed. Beautiful stuff. This was great and saved our saw a lot. But nevertheless, I had to scribe the patterns on using a template, a gem template, and then trim them out on the trim saw. And then we put them in a tray, and people have, I usually have about 125 different stones in the tray for people to select from. And then they use a wet sponge to see what it's going to look like when it's polished, and start from there.
So you open at 8:30.
And we open at 8:30 and do the preparatory work of getting people who have finished their stones off the sticks, and we like to display them up on the wall in the so-called Riker box, exhibited with their name and the stone under it. And if they're leaving right away, then instead of going in the Riker box, it will go into a special little plastic bag. It'll have their name on it, the name of the stone, and the size of the stone, so they can take it in to a lapidary supply house and get mountings. And they also have a buyer's guide
that gives the various buyers for all, even foreign countries, all the states and foreign countries. Now, this isn't all of the places that will have mountings, because not everybody advertises in that guide, but it's the April issue of the Lapidary Journal, and it's always the buyer's guide. And when I go through and I read every one of those dealers' description and highlight it in yellow if they have mountings, and then I transfer that information to the page where the states are listed and the cities, and highlight the name of the dealer that has mountings. So when people say, all right, I've finished this, now what am I going to do with it? And I say, where do you live? And then we go over to the buyer's guide and flip to their state and find their town or one near them and find the buyer that's been highlighted, and they can look up the address. So they can take their stone back, and that's why I make sure that they have the name of the stone and the size of it.
And do most of them mount them for wearing around the neck?
A lot of them put them in pendants, but many put them in rings. And
men
put them in, they put them in brooches, and sometimes bracelets, crosses. You can buy the metal crosses that have the mounting for a gemstone in the center of it. In the early years, I had people trying to cut out crosses up there. And we found that most of those pieces wound up in the tumbler and break too easily.
So your normal day would be 8:30 till when? What would be the time you close up shop?
We do the preliminary work from 8:30 to 10, and then we open the doors to our customers at 10 o'clock. In the morning, now, we close at 11:40, and so that it takes us 10 minutes to spin the wheels dry, and it's very important to have those grinding wheels dry. It's very dangerous, extremely dangerous, to leave a grinding wheel wet, because it can explode and the next time it's turned on.
So you dry them for the lunch hour?
We dry them before we go to the lunch hour, and then we are back there at 1:30 and open up at 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's posted on the board that we're open from 2 to 4. That's mainly so we don't have guests coming down there as late as 4 to start. But we do take staff after 4 o'clock, because many of them are working and they simply can't get there, you know, before 3:30 or so. And so we work with the staff from then until about 4:45, and then I get out of there just in time to get to 5 o'clock dinner.
So you've really had a full work day.
Yes.
About 8 hours every day.
About 7 to 8 hours.
Do you work Monday through Friday, or do you...
We work Monday through Friday and then Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure of the year that I started having an assistant. The first assistants that I had, they sent somebody in at 2 o'clock to help me from 2 to 4, and of course they didn't know a thing, you know, and they'd come in with the crowd, and I felt sorry for them, and I got them to understand here that this had to be someone who could work with me before people came, so I could show them what to do. And so it finally got changed to where I now have a regular staff person full time.
Throughout the whole summer?
Yes.
Same person?
This year I've had two people. Pam was with me the first 6 weeks, and now Robin is with me.
And have they normally been people who had no experience in lapidary, and
that's
you had
right.
to teach them from
that's
scratch?
That's right. I've only had two people who were experienced. My very first full-time person was a young man that I'd started him as a teenager when he was 13, and his family came here every year, and he would head right straight for the lapidary. And so by the time he was 17, he had made up his mind. He said, you need an assistant. Well, that gives you some idea of when we finally started with a full-time assistant.
And he said, you need an assistant. This place is too busy. Well, I'd had a lot of guests tell me that. And so he said, I can't think of anything else I'd rather do next summer. So and I waited to see, and sure enough, he applied to come, and he was a crackerjack because he knew that lapidary inside and out.
Yes.
And so he was a good one. But most of them have been with me for a month at a time. And I did have one girl was with me, Chris Martin, for 12 weeks 1 year, and then she came back to fill in for 3 weeks, kind of in between people, another year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always easy to get someone for the whole summer up here, but they try, and try to at least have someone that can be with me for 6 weeks, because it takes 3 weeks before before they are feeling really comfortable in. I have them do 3 stones first. I start them right out as though, and we do this during the work hours before people come. You know, I will teach them just like I teach the students, and then I give them very special training on the beginning wheel, so that they can start somebody, and then the next I give them training on the finishing wheel, the polishing wheel. And it's the in-between steps and the sanding where people's mistakes or problems show up in stones. And it takes a little longer. You have to get kind of a practiced eye to detect that. And so they are usually on the job about 3 to 4 weeks before they are feeling comfortable in handling the sanding process. But there are many, many other things in the preparatory work that the assistant gets involved in, and they're very busy full-time, such as they help with the cutting, the slabbing of stones, and the trimming out.
Are the people who come as guests, they are certainly adults, but are there youth, high school youth, and younger children who come, or do you have a minimum age?
We don't take children. Under 13.
Under 13.
I do take 13-year-olds. No, the equipment I feel is too dangerous for little children.
Do you get many high school age, 13 and above, who
yes.
are interested?
Yes, we do get quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, there are a number of young people that do come in and work. And, of course, I have younger ones that come in that would like to.
Yes.
I explain that they really need to be more developed physically, and
uh-huh.
and I've had some of the adults say, well, now I see why you don't take them under 13 after they have worked the wheel themselves.
And if they keep coming back year after year, they can come
yes.
in when they're 13.
Yes, and some of them are kind of waiting for that, and
yes.
they'll say, well, next year I'll be there.
Yeah. Is there a person designated to succeed you as lapidary at Holden? Has a person
been
found?
I think what we would say is that we're working on that,
mm-hmm.
and what they really need and are looking for is a retired person who can come like I do every year, you know, and give it continuity, because it is really very complicated down there. It's a complex process, and you need someone that can come repeatedly, if at all possible.
And for 6 months, preferably.
And yes, that's right, for 6 months. We had someone that passed through the village not long ago who we thought would be ideal, and I thought he said he would be retiring in 2 years, and then I had misunderstood him. He was retiring for 4 years.
Oh.
And he said, yes, I'll be glad to come for a year after I retire, but that's 1992. But we are working on that, and we have someone that we think will be doing it next year.
In 89?
Yes, mm-hmm. in 89.
Good.
And we have another idea that I haven't had a chance to run past Elmer yet for between now and 92. So.
Now, you've lived here through three directors, or at least parts of three directors' periods of service.
Four.
Well, four, counting the interim of Fritz Norstad.
Yes.
How have you seen the village change in that period, that In fact, you can go back to your mm-hmm. first visit here in 68, mm-hmm. which is 20 years. Mm-hmm. What changes have you seen in the village?
Well, as I said the other day, it's when you're here every year, it's I don't think you're as aware of the changes as when you've been away for a while.
Yes,
it's always interesting
gradual.
To me that people that come in and they haven't been here for 6 years or 10 years, and I ask them, well, what changes are there, you know, and they see changes.
Yes.
And to me, I say, well, Holden is still Holden, you know, it's still very similar. In 68, when I came, I said I went to every session, all right? At session time, there was just one session, as I recall, and
yes.
you went to that.
Yes.
And they were good sessions.
But you didn't have to choose between competing offerings.
No, I didn't have
offerings.
To choose between competing offerings.
Right.
And in 68, there was still some of that. I think the 10:45 session in the morning was usually held for some headliner for many, many years. But now I think they have more than one session.
Yes, two or sometimes three.
Yes, at 10:30. Mm-hmm. But it used to be just one. Then at 4 o'clock there might be some competing sessions, but not as much as there is now. And I don't recall that we had sessions between dinner and Vespers, but there was sessions after Vespers. In fact, Carol Hinderly told us that he was apt to schedule sessions, you know.
Impromptu.
Right,
yes.
At midnight even,
yes.
you know, or 2 o'clock in the morning in the sauna. But Bible study, they did that one time. Bible study, I think it was at 2 o'clock in the morning in the sauna, and people went to it. He said we slept too much and that all we had to do was catch 5-minute naps.
Yes.
During the day. But now there is quite a bit of competition, I think, in the many, many things, many offerings that they have.
One reason being that there are more people who come now than in 68, certainly. The attendance is greater, I think, in the summer weeks.
Probably since 68, but they've had a pretty large attendance in July and August, in those 2 months.
Since the early 70s, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I first came in 65 with our family, and at that time there was only one offering, at
mm-hmm.
least in the morning hours,
mm-hmm.
and I think most of the day there was only one thing going on at one time,
mm-hmm.
and everybody went to that if they went to anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Together.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what other observations about Holden do you have that you'd like to share? What other comments before we conclude this tape?
Well, it's really very hard to express that. Holden has grown to mean an awful lot to me, and it's very hard to explain why, too, you know. It's the people, mainly, the people that you meet here, and I remember the first years, the goodbyes, there used to be so much weeping. I think we're more controlled now than we were then. I think kind of the way I've managed to handle that is because I know I'm coming every year, I figure I'm going to see them again.
Yes.
You know, so when I say goodbye to them, okay, you'll be back next year, you know. Well,
yes.
Maybe it's going to be 2 years. And the time goes by so fast. But people walk in and I'll say, how long ago was it? You know, well, maybe it was 6 years. But still, the point is that they came back.
Yes.
And I do get to see them again. And I've made so many good friendships here that this is going to be the hard part for me.
Yes. But you do hope to get back on visits, at least for short-term.
Well, I'm hoping to,
periods.
But since the problem is, my orthopedist said was, there are Christian places where you can volunteer that is on flat ground.
Yes, easier to get around.
And no stairs.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know how hard I've tried to figure out where one could stay and not be on an incline or stairs.
Here at Holden.
Here at Holden, you see.
Well, there are some places that would be better than a second floor where you have been.
Well, no, because then you have inclines.
Part of Lodge 4.
Lodge
still has an incline.
A Lodge 4. You see, it's harder for me to, it's more painful for me to go downhill than it is to go downstairs. I go downstairs quite easily because I swing down.
So ramps are no solution for you.
No, ramps are terrible. I avoid them.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I go to the guest laundry instead of the staff laundry because I can't do that hill anymore.
Yes.
And so...
Well, one would hope that at least for short visits, your orthopedist would let you return.
I'm hoping that I get out on flat ground long enough, you know, maybe sciatica is what's been bothering me last year and this year a lot, and that is very painful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dorothy Bennett, many years at Holden Village, beginning in 1934, mm-hmm. which is amazing when you... You were here before the present village town site was here, and then visits from 68 on under the village as a church center, and then since 74 as lapidary,
mm-hmm.
and a remarkable period of service to Holden Village. And many people have been blessed by your service and your teaching them of new wonders in rocks and gemstones.
Well, I think the village has blessed me with the many offerings, the things that are available to get to. I couldn't go to the sessions that were taking place during the same time that I'm working, but I could get to some of those between dinner and vespers.
Yes, and evenings. Weekend, I suppose weekend things you could also take part in.
Yes, on weekend things.
Mm-hmm.
So the village has done a lot in my life in many ways, people-wise as well as its offerings. And again, as you said in your book, you can't describe it. You have to experience it.
People have to come here and see for themselves.
That's right.
That's right.
That's
yes.
right.
Yes.
They do.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk with you. And this is Charles Lutz. We've been talking with Dorothy Bennett, longtime lapidary at Holden Village. Thank you, Dorothy.